Rawlinson of Early Word. Welcome to First Flights, the Penguin Debut Author Program, a unique opportunity for librarians to get to know the authors of major debut novels coming out in the next few months. If you haven't already, you can join First Flights by signing up on earlyword.com. You'll receive advanced copies of forthcoming debut novels and have the opportunity to join a live online chat with each author. Today, I'm speaking with Timothy S. Lane, author of Rules for Becoming a Legend, his first novel, Coming from Viking, an imprint of Penguin USA in March. Tim joins us today by phone from Oregon. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Nora.
I have to challenge you on something. This is a program about first novels. And in the acknowledgments in your book, you say flat out, this isn't my first book, it's not even my second, and it's not even my third. And you say you failed your way into this book. Explain that.
Yeah, I think when I was really young, I was fascinated with writing and wanted to be an author. So when I was 18, I decided, okay, one summer, I'm going to write a book.
At 18, you decided to write a book?
Yeah, at 18, I said, okay, it just takes one summer. I know enough about life. I can do this. And I wrote a book, and I showed it to everybody I knew, which is really embarrassing because it was quite bad, actually. I still have it, and it's hard to look at. And then from there, I just kept going over the next 10 or 12 years and just kept trying and kept writing. And each time, it got a little better. And finally, with Rules, I was able to force myself to actually spend a lot of time editing and rewriting and really making it perfect, which didn't come naturally to me. And at the end of the day, I had something that was good enough to go, and thankfully Penguin picked it up.
That's an interesting contrast to the main character in your book, Jimmy Kirkus, who is basically a basketball prodigy. I mean, at 7 years old, he picks up a basketball for the first time and just is able to make baskets. I think he does like 9 in a row.
Right.
And his father, who had played basketball, had tried to keep him away from playing it because of his own problems that had resulted as a basketball player. So here we have a contrast. We have your main character who just has this talent that seems to be God-given, and that he really doesn't have to put a lot of practice into. Yet that contrasts with you as an author who got your success through really hard work and practice.
Yeah, and I think it's a mix of both. I think I did have something there, a nugget of something, and when I was young, ever since I can remember, my teachers told me, you have a knack for this, and they would always point out my voice. They say, okay, you have a great voice, you can really tell a story in a unique way. But it just took over the course of those 6 books, finally it took me that long to figure out that getting stuff out on the page isn't my problem. I can put nice sounding sentences on the page all day long. It's getting in there and really taking the scalpel and cutting out the stuff that doesn't matter. And that's where editing and rewriting really is hard, is taking out these things that you so love. And I have whole documents called Rules for Becoming Legend cut sections that are just pages and pages of stuff that didn't make the book but I love too much to delete forever. Jimmy has this ability to just kind of drain shots, whereas it took me countless hours before and after work, to take this raw talent and kind of figure out how to rein it in a little bit. And thankfully I can do much better than I used to, and hopefully I'll be able to continue to be able to be a discerning self-editor.
Well, I get the sense just in the structures of some of your sentences that spare crystalline quality of someone who has reworked something until it gets down to its essence. I could quote dozens of sentences, but here's one I particularly like. He was like a smudged, unclear word without the sentence written around it. That sounds to me like something that is very quick to say, but probably took hours to distill.
I remember that sentence specifically, and I remember working on it and reworking it and really tinkering with it to get it perfect. And my process is, I'll print out a sheet and I'll read each sentence at least 3 times, and I keep a little tally in the margins. And sometimes it'll take, you know, 7 times or 8 times for me to be able to go over to the next sentence, which sounds probably a little obsessive and weird. But, and I remember kind of getting to that sentence and really being like, what does this need? What does this actually need to have, you know, legs enough to go? And okay, and just kind of paring it down. And finally I got to something I was happy with. And you know, it never actually stops. I think reading it today, I can even pick it up and be, okay, where can I cut some stuff?
That makes me curious about what it was like when you actually had an editor working on the book and suggesting changes.
Yeah, that was such a neat process. When Viking offered to buy it or made an offer, there was a few other publishers who offered as well, and I had these phone conversations with editors, and we kind of discussed where they saw it going and what they saw changes that they needed to make and stuff I needed to work on. And Maggie and I, the editor for this book, we just really clicked, and she kind of got it. And she would say things to me that would make me say, she would say, I think this is what you're trying to say, but this is what I'm actually getting. And that's exactly what I'm trying to say. I didn't know it wasn't coming off that way. This is great. And she's very good about, you know, taking out stuff that's a little bit too verbose or flowery. And it was awesome to have somebody else in the room, basically, in that mind space, and caring as much as I did. And it was super novel because you work on a novel for so long, and you're just by yourself with it, and you almost kind of feel like you're crazy or something. And then you have this editor who's also as invested as you and is there on a sentence level with you, and it's really great.
Was the structure there from the beginning? It's called Rules for Becoming a Legend, and each chapter is its own specific rule.
No, it was quite different when I first imagined it. It was all in present tense, and then I kind of started dicing it up and figuring out a way to structure it, and I kind of came upon Rules for Becoming a Legend probably halfway through the process. And once it just popped into my head, and I remember I was sitting on the couch with my wife, and I said, what do you think about this? And she said, oh, that's the title. There you go. And from there, the reason it came up is because I was kind of researching what makes a legend, and I was going across all these different things, you know, songwriters or basketball stars, football stars, all these different legends that we have in our society, and doing a little bit of background research into what made them a legend, and saying, okay, you know, there's some common notes among these, and saying, okay, which one of these rules can I make fit into Jimmy's life, which one serves it, and kind of going from there. And I, like, for example, I was listening to an interview about Sam Kinison, and he has this famous thing that he said, you know, neither confirm nor deny. I said, okay, that's great. I'm gonna take that. I'm gonna put it on the ongoing list, and I'm gonna use that for later. And so, just over the course of a few years of writing this, I came kind of eased into the structure a little bit, eased into the idea of rules.
The other part of the structure is you begin with a very signal moment in Jimmy's life, and then you work from that both backwards and forwards. How did that evolve?
I had a health teacher in eighth grade, and he was this kind of guy who would tell you a story, and you didn't know why you were listening, but it just stuck with you. And he told me this, he told the class this one time, and he said, you know, as the reason you wear a helmet is because when you're going on a bike or whatever and you crash, your head can't handle that. But you could run as hard as you wanted into a brick wall, and your head is biologically made that you wouldn't get permanently damaged. And that image of this running into a brick wall without a helmet just stuck with me over the years. And so I imagined this kid doing this, and then I kind of worked backward from there. What would have to happen in a kid's life to get him to this point, and what would the result be? How would he step away from this? And you know, and then I kind of plugged in a lot of the stuff I was kind of thinking about that time, about our pressure on sports these days in our culture, and kind of trying to digest growing up in a small town, and it all kind of fit together in that way.
You actually were a sports writer in a small town.
I was, yeah. I worked for the Malala Pioneer, yeah.
And how do you think that affected your writing style?
Well, going to those basketball games, I mean, I was the sports department. It was me and my camera, and that was it. And I would go to these basketball games or these football games or whatever was going on, and it was the most important thing happening for 50 miles. Everybody was super involved. People, you know, people had shirts on with, you know, with their the favorite player's name on the back, and they were shouting and cheering and chanting, and it was just such a hot packed environment that kind of lent this electricity that I was able to tap into when I was writing this story about just the passion involved with it. And also, just on a little bit more of a, you know, sentence by sentence practical basis, if you're writing a sports article, you only have so much paper you can cover. That's all you get. You get this much ink, this much paper. And it really makes you tell a story in a distinct way. And they always say, tell all your information in the first, you know, couple sentences, and then kind of flesh it out as you go forward when you're writing for a newspaper article. And I basically do that in this book. I start out with Jimmy running into a wall, and then everything else is kind of fleshing it out. So I think there's probably a lot of influences there, some I didn't even realize before I started talking to you, and now it's all coming out.
Well, that's the whole point. You tweeted recently that the French rights have been sold to the book. I'm looking forward to seeing how the French present the book.
Yeah. I worked in publishing, and I happened to be able to work in foreign rights. So to have the French buy the rights was a complete thrill. And I know the process. I knew who the subagent was, and I was just kind of really jacked up about it. And I'm sure the cover will be completely different, and I won't even recognize it. But I'm really excited that it'll be out there, and I couldn't be happier about that.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Tim. Thanks for joining us and for giving the Penguin First Flights participants insight on your debut novel, Rules for Becoming a Legend.
Thanks a lot, Nora.
And thanks to you out there for listening. If you're not a member of Penguin's First Flights program, you can sign up on earlyword.com. And please come back for our live chat with Tim Lane.